начнет колыбель, тихо дрема начнется, коснется лба нежной рукой. Уставшее солнце все ниже садится, скрываясь за Русью рекой. И месяц уж по небу ходит высоко, он младный чей златолаз. А зори его холодны и далеки, но чем-то похожи на нас.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker in north central Indiana on the March the 22nd, 2014, Saturn's Day. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Go up to our big website and check it out, resist.com. And our telephone numbers are in the bunker, in the Robert J. Matthews Memorial Bunker. The numbers are 574-267-5036. The main outgoing message line is 559-670-1473. Somebody sent me a picture of South Carolina State House with the George Washington statue boxed in and covered for the MLK Day observance of the state at the State House. And that was a big insult. No, I think it's just the opposite. I don't think that we want the people, this herd of Negroes, to have George Washington have to look down on them or look at them. So it depends on how you look at things. I'm glad they covered up Washington. So symbolically, he didn't have to look at the motley crew out there. There's always two ways of looking at things, you know. Besides, sure, we want separation. They don't want to have anything to do about George Washington. That's fine. We don't want them to, because we want to be separate from them in all ways. Like the song says, always look at the bright side. Even though, being realistic about it, he was part of the ruling class that caused our problem, because he had hundreds of slaves and profited greatly by slavery. He wasn't, at any time that I know of, planning to ship any of them back to Africa either. Well, I see they had a clash down in New Zealand. Yeah, white supremacists clashed with anti-racism protesters in Central City Christ Church today. Police were present to separate the two groups as they exchanged chants. The white supremacist group featured members of the right wing resistance and the National Front. It was led by Kyle Chapman. Chapman said it was the fifth such march, and it was about showing how society is full of hypocrisy and full of white racism. It was the first time they had marched in the Central City since the earthquake. Well, I forgot about that earthquake. Yeah. Anti-racist activist James Dan said it was important to show that the white supremacists were not unopposed. Quote, it's heartening to see young people come out and decide this is what they want to Christ Church, and had an unjustified reputation of being white and racist. But this shows there is an opposition here. Protesters yelled slogans like, refugees are welcome, racists are not. That comes from the Fairfax New Zealand News. Well, you got plenty of white supremacy down there. The ruling class in New Zealand, just like the ruling class in most places, is white. All your people in the government are white supremacists, whether they like it or not. Working class people demonstrating on the street are not white supremacists. They don't have the power or the money to be white supremacists. Let's get this straight. Get ready for it. There's a new word on the street. That old style social racism is still with us. 24/7. You're right about to start hearing it everywhere. Think every day interpersonal racism is a thing of the past. In progressive politics, most of the action has moved on from the civil rights struggles of the past to a focus on societal or structural racism. But wait, not so fast. There's a new word on the street. The old-style social racism is still with us 24/7. That word is microaggression. And you're about to start hearing it everywhere. A student at McGill University recently had to apologize publicly for the microaggression of mailing a doctored video of President Obama kicking open a door, unquote, as part of a joke about midterms. Campus newspapers have begun denouncing the evils of such small apparent slights. Here's what they do. The concept of microaggression has leapt from the shadows of academic writing into the bright light of general conversation, especially in the wake of a widely consulted work by professors Daryl Wing Su and Madonna Constantine over the last seven or so years. Microaggressions are those academic describe them as quiet, often unintended slights, racist or sexist, that make a person feel underestimated on the basis of their color or gender. the idea that whites should now watch out for being microaggressors in the same way that they learned long ago not to be racist in more overt ways. Importantly, the microaggressor is quite often a goodly person of the kind we assume is too enlightened to pop off with racist or sexist insults. The black journalist Torrey has recounted, for example, being in a writer's program and being asked by a prominent literary critic, "So why are you here?" The critic didn't ask in a hostile way, but the question itself carried an implication that there was some reason that this presence was unusual, and was obvious that the factor was. The critic likely had no idea how that came off. And of course, Tour went on to have a fine life, but this was nevertheless a microaggression. It was when a middle school teacher praised a feminist friend of mine for having made the highest math score of any girl in the class, or when I once asked a linguist a question about her presentation, only for him to repeatedly give me an answer I wasn't seeking. The problem was that he was spontaneously assumed that I wasn't familiar with the basic grammatical topic he was covering, when I, as familiar with it as any linguist of 25 years standing, was interested in more specific matter. This man was not a racist, but by any stretch of the imagination, but he was spontaneously assuming that a black linguist must only be interested in societal issues rather than the wonky mechanics of grammar. Oh, they're fine-tuning this thing. We're going to have hate crimes based on microaggression, the way it looks. Of course, I've been just fine since, too. In fact, some might see this whole microaggression concept as just a way to keep grievance going in America, where it gets ever harder to call people on naked bigotry. Well, I don't have a problem doing it. Life is tough for everybody, you might think. When does all this poor me stuff stop? One need not to be racist or sexist to have that sentiment, especially given that the nature of microaggression, subtle and unintended, occurring in the hustle and bustle of societal interaction, is such that they will never cease to exist entirely. Perhaps there is a value in fostering an awareness of such things in the name of our society becoming ever more enlightened. Enlightened, that's a funny term. It's comforting that the term is at least microaggression. It acknowledges that changes have occurred, that we're dealing with something smaller and less starkly egregious than name-calling and formal exclusion. That's better than just calling all of it, from cross-bringing to asking a black person if you can touch their hair, racism, which has always been sloppy and counterproductive. Anyhow, this article goes on and on, but I guess you'll probably start hearing more about microaggression and how they have to stamp out microaggression. Well, now, this report seems to differ from that. A government report has found that American schools are still racist. The findings indicate that the public school students of color are punished more and have limited access to veteran teachers than their white peers. Surveys released on Friday by the U.S. Education Department included data from every U.S. school district. And probably most of the employees of the U.S. Education Department now are probably black under Obama. The Education Department's 2011 to 2012 Civil Rights Data Collection is a survey that is conducted every 2 years and indicates that 5% of the white students were suspended annually compared to 16% of black students. Of course, that had nothing to do with their aberrant behavior. Black students are reported to be suspended or expelled at triple the rate that white students are, while black girls were suspended at a rate of 12% than girls of other ethnicities in most categories of boys. Well, watch the way they act and see why. They never want to talk about that, do they? Discrimination has lowered the education performance of minority students and black students. Well, I think it's lowered the performance of all students, actually. As it was found out by a previous research, that non-white students were stuck with less experienced teachers as compared to whites, probably because the teachers are fit. They have been around a while and are fed up with blacks raising hell in the classroom, so they don't want to teach them. Who had access to experienced teachers, while 7% of black students attended schools that about 20% of the teachers had failed to meet license and certification requirements. Well, that's because they come in at the lower end. And so they give them the black classes or the more black classes. Yeah, there's an answer to all of this, but they don't seem to see the real reasoning behind this. Every one in four school districts were reported to be paying teachers in less diverse high schools 5,000 more than teachers in schools with higher black and Latino mestizo students. U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan explained how the reports draw a clear line of how far the campaign for the promise of equal education to every child has gone, and it is clear that the U.S. has still a long way to go to ensure that every student is provided with an equal opportunity to succeed. Yeah, let's see here. Yep, that's it. They got it all figured out. You dirty white people and dirty white teachers. Wasn't for you, everything would be okay. Gee, I thought that everybody who lived out there in North and South Dakota and Wyoming loved the Negroes. Casper, Wyoming, an African-American man, color him black, who was a guard at the Wyoming State Penitentiary, is claiming that supervisors at the jail did not do enough to change a racist and discriminatory work environment among staff members at the prison during the roughly 3 years he worked there. And he is pissed and he is suing. There must be some racists out there that I didn't meet. It's interesting that the bulk of that story was blocked out so you couldn't read it. That's interesting. Sounds to me like racism is spreading. University students say racism is prevalent in Maltese society. That's on the island of Malta. And on the heels of that, we have this story. It says here, Morocco is known as a host to different racial groups who most of the time co-live without any confrontation or issues. Generally speaking, Moroccans are famous for their hospitality and open-mindedness. However, the campaign mentioned above wouldn't have been launched if there weren't large numbers of people who felt offended by others' racist comments and stares. In Marrakesh, for example, you would hardly ever notice a sign of racism towards a dark-skinned person. This may be due to the fact that a number of Marrakeshis are dark-skinned. They are our relatives, our friends, our neighbors, our teachers. We don't even consider them to be different in any way because, after all, they're not. At least this is the way I perceived Moroccans to be before I asked a couple of Moroccan friends the following question. Do you think Moroccans are racist? And their answers were shockingly as follows. In the U.S., people admit that they have racism and work towards eliminating it. As a result, today, the U.S. has the first Negro president. On the other, in our country, we never admitted that we have racism, which is even more dangerous since we can't work on solving the problem that does not exist in our minds, says O'Sullivan, who asked that his full name not be mentioned. Ghislaine expressed a different opinion. She expressed her point of view by saying, being dark-skinned isn't about color only, it's somehow a way of life. How they speak, how they behave, how they interact with others, It's quite predictable. It's their identity. Oh, well, let's see here. Blacks have earned a couple of stereotypes that are unfortunately true. For example, if you say Italians eat so much olive oil and Germans drink too much beer, it might be stereotyped, but it is also true. Same goes for dark-skinned people. A friend of mine used to say they smell not only physically, but also mentally. This is quite racist, you would say. But it's their behavior that makes them really unwanted, unquote. So even in Morocco, of all places, we find racism because they're racist against the sub-Saharan Negroes. Bet you didn't know that yesterday, the 21st of March 2014, was International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination. You can have economic discrimination and all kinds of discrimination, but don't you dare have racial discrimination. A day that encourages tolerance and acceptance of diversity. To mark the event, IB Times UK, see, this is a big business magazine, looks at some cases of obvious discrimination when it comes to reporting missing black people. They're worried about missing black people. According to a phenomenon defined as missing white woman syndrome, the mainstream media goes into overdrive in cases of missing persons that are white, female, attractive, and rich. Well, that's okay. Non-white women, by contrast, receive scant attention in the media. In the media reports, well, that's we got to do something about that. Here are a few examples. Tashishna Matthews from Detroit, 13, has been missing since Saturday, 15th of March, 2013. She was last seen getting into a black vehicle with a tall, dark-skinned black man at a gas station in the 4,000 block of East 8 Mile Drive. Sounds like the black Ku Klux Klan to me. Magali Moore, Tishiana's mother, said her daughter is really a good girl, aren't they all? And her disappearance is uncharacteristic. She never done anything like this before. Tishiana called her a couple of days ago and briefly said she was okay. Moore said she can't afford to make flyers to let people know her daughter is missing. So she has been visiting the gas station where Tishiana vanished and asking passerbys about the girl and showing them photos. Well, it seemed to me that if the black men are kidnapping black women, that is a black problem of the right Reverend Al Sharpton. You know, why doesn't he get on that? Need some demonstrations there, Brother Al. No, not Brother Al. Just Al. Anyhow, this international big business magazine goes on in total anguish about all these black kids that are missing. Do you believe they really care? Come on now. Get real. Even the black rich don't give a damn. Talk about embarrassing. Michelle Obama, the first, well, you can say first lady, not me, has spoken out on human rights concerns during her visit to China. She's going to tell the Chinese how to run their country. Obama briefly set aside her policy of soft diplomacy to give a speech advocating freedom of expression and open access to information.
Ukraine. Well, if, for instance, Russia...
Anyhow, she says, my husband and I are on the receiving end of plenty of questioning and criticism about our media and our fellow citizens, and it's not always easy, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. Obama did not call on China directly to acknowledge its citizens' human rights, and has avoided political issues during her visit to improve relations between the two countries and build goodwill with the Chinese government. Well, if she really knew how most Chinese feel about the Negro race, she wouldn't have gone there in the first place. For her to be lecturing the Chinese people is even worse than a bad joke. My goodness, they got racism in Tunis. Shows a picture of them. Tunisians protest racism in downtown Tunis yesterday. A group of activists gathered today in front of the municipal theater in downtown Tunis to protest against racism and the treatment of blacks by Tunisian society. The demonstration occurred on March 21st, marking the International Day of Elimination of Racial Discrimination. Activists on Avenue Bourguiba cited the negative words in Tunisian Arabic used to describe blacks. Wow. Quote, everywhere we hear words like wisif, giragira, zambak, and kulush, unquote. Tasman Fafau, a 21-year-old university student, told Tunisia Live she was protesting in downtown Tunis, but said that even bringing up the issue could lead to ostracism. Quote, we are here to bear witness of the presence of racism in Tunisia and to denounce racial discrimination. You see, even the half-whites or quarter-whites or whatever, you'll never get rid of discrimination and racial discrimination. In fact, the more they do this kind of stuff, I think the more they promote it. Here's a comment on that story. Racism does exist in Tunisia, but it's far from being violent. But the danger comes from regionalism, which is frightening. If you happen to work in the South and you're from a different region, then you can expect some undelicate surprises. Be careful where you park your car. They got a little problem up there in Lancaster, California, and I'm not sure whether it's all bad or not. Lancaster's multimillionaire right-wing mayor, Rex Parris, hasn't been a big blue America cause celebre, despite a record that has painted him as one of California's more unsavory and fringy mayors. We learned that in 2008 he fired the Lancaster Planning Commission because it had refused to rubber stamp an application from Walmart to build a megastore selling alcohol, ammunition, and weapons next to a school in Quartz Hill, an unincorporated area of Lancaster. Last year, we ran across him again, the guy who tried to ban dogs, he says, that are favored by gangs and who proposed restrictions on landlords who want to rent to tenants with Section 8 federal housing vouchers, while helping fund a program to bus homeless people out of town and shut down the local motel to prevent the notorious Mongols Motorcycle Club from meeting in Lancaster. And kicking aside roadblocks for developers wanting to do business in town. Critics say Parris, who was elected in 2008, is an arrogant bully and an unstoppable control freak. King Rex, they call him, or T-Rex. This time he was building a drone force in the Antelope Valley at the behest of his bribery-obsessed crony, Buck McYon, whose political career has been financed by weapons manufacturers. Whoa, no joy in Lancaster. Well, I see nitwits at it again. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon have ordered the army to continue preparing for the possible military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities at a cost of at least 10 billion shekels. That's $2.89 billion this year. Well, they'll have to wait till they get the money in from the United States before they can do that, won't they? I don't know in what month the United States pays the blackmail to Israel. Probably every month. Remember me talking about these GIs drinking the chlorinated water over in Vietnam? Well, here's the information on it, supplied by my webmaster, because I couldn't find the book in my library. Anyhow, during the Vietnam War, autopsies performed on young American soldiers killed in combat left coroners scratching their heads. When examining, these soldiers looked like booze-guzzling, cigarette-smoking, overweight couch potatoes in their 70s, not like 20-year-old fighting machines. Thick, sticky cholesterol plaques filled their arteries. Some of the men had total or partial blockage of one or more arteries. Some even had massive cholesterol lesions on their hearts. It's not a stretch to say if these men hadn't died in combat, they would have died of a stroke or heart attack. So how'd they get so sick? Was it their diet? Did they smoke too much? Did they inhale Agent Orange? Well, the U.S. government commissioned a study to solve the mystery. They hired scientists to compare the fallen soldiers to men who died in car crashes. They found one major difference between the two groups of men: their drinking water. You see, U.S. soldiers took large water purification tablets before they could safely drink the water in Vietnam. These tablets were pure chlorine. I guess it did prevent soldiers from getting diarrhea in Vietnam, a major problem in the war, but it also nearly killed them. And based on the research I've seen, if you drink straight from the tap, the same will happen to you sooner or later. So there you go. And, of course, the cancer rate started going sky high in the early part of the last century after they started chlorinating the water in most cities. Remember? No, you don't remember. But it's the truth. That's what happened. Don't forget, your body can absorb chlorine when taking a shower. Yeah. So you might want to put a filter if you're in the city where chlorine's in the water. You better get a filter. Now, the interesting thing about this information's been around for 20, 30 years. Yeah. Well, we've had another oil spill at Highland in North Dakota. Cleanup workers have contained about 34,000 gallons of crude spewed from a broken oil pipeline in northwestern North Dakota, state health officials said Friday. North Dakota Water Quality Director Dennis Fallis said the breach occurred Thursday morning on Highland Crude LLC's pipeline about 6 miles northeast of Alexander. A gasket on the above-ground pipeline appears to have failed near a compressor station, spewing out 800 barrels of crude. Fulis said a barrel holds 42 gallons, so there you go. More pollution in North Dakota. Well, Duke Energy's at it again down in North Carolina. Yeah, North Carolina regulators say they've asked a judge to withdraw a proposed settlement that would have allowed Duke Energy to resolve environmental violations by paying a $99,000 fine with no requirement that the $50 billion company clean up its pollution. The State Department of Environment and Natural Resources said in a statement on Friday that it would scuttle a proposed consent order to settle violations for groundwater contamination leaching from coal ash dumps near Charlotte and Asheville. These dumps hold millions of gallons of crap, and it's really an environmental nightmare. Unemployment is bad among the veterans. The unemployment rate among veterans who had joined the military after September 11, 2001, averaged 9% last year, down from 9.9% in 2012. The Labor Department said that was about 1.6 percentage points above the rate for civilian population. So we got problems here in River City, man. Well, Bernie Madoff is letting the cat out of the bag. The financial world was stunned to learn in 2008 of Bernard Madoff's years-long multi-billion dollar Ponzi scheme. But according to Madoff, one Wall Street bank knew all about it long before. And they knew that something was wrong and chose not to do anything about it. Quote, J.P. Morgan knew it, he said, as part of a wide-ranging interview last week at a medium security prison here, where Madoff is serving a 150-year sentence after pleading guilty in March 2009 to massive investment and securities fraud that devastated thousands of clients. Of course these big bankers knew it. Who's kidding who? Well, about 140 cases of missing unauthorized use of nuclear radioactive material reported to the UN Atomic Agency in 2013, highlighting the challenges facing world leaders at a nuclear security summit next week. Any loss or theft of highly enriched uranium, plutonium, or different types of radioactive sources is potentially dangerous, as Al-Qaeda-style militants could try to use them to make a crude nuclear device or a so-called dirty bomb, experts say, which probably reading between the lines are encouraging them to do it. It's like old Ted Nugent's in trouble again.
Good evening. A possible appearance by a controversial rocker in one East Texas city is over before it even started.
The city of Longview confirmed today they canceled negotiations with Texas rocker Ted Nugent. The city's promoter was working to secure a headliner for their 4th of July festival and concert. And as our Cody Lillick reports, the city had to pay for a concert that wasn't even confirmed.
We decided that that wasn't the direction we wanted to go for the festival.
A change of heart for Longview's 4th of July celebration. After being in discussions with a booker for rocker Ted Nugent to headline a ticketed concert, the city decided to cancel talks.
So that's been going since January, and they were just in discussions with different artists, and then I think more seriously in discussions with him, probably in early February.
Harris said the decision to back out of planning happened in mid-February. That's about the same time Nugent was in the middle of a controversy for his comments made about the president while campaigning for gubernatorial candidate Greg Abbott. The move away from Nugent did not come without a price.
Promoter and with the booking agency, there was a disagreement about, okay, where were we in those negotiations when we decided that that's not the direction that we wanted to go?
And the city agreed to pay $16,000 to stop discussions. That's half of the amount Nugent would have been guaranteed if the performance happened.
That was a very expensive political correctness.
It's a move Gregg County Republican Chair Keith Rotra says he doesn't agree with.
I'm sad that City of Longview has done this. I think it was done because of a great deal of political correctness, political pressure.
The city says Nugent's latest controversy is only one of the reasons they decided to back out. The money paid is coming from the Mod Cop Convention Center's budget, and they'll make adjustments as necessary to help them recover.
We still have the ability to make a concert happen. It's not going to impact us in any way.
Now they say they're hunting for that headliner to take the Mod Cop stage this July 4th. In Longview, Cody Lick, KLTV 7 News.
We reached out to Ted Nugent's spokesperson. They said the event was never on their calendar, and they have no further comments.
Well, you have to get a bunch of Negroes to headline the thing. Yeah. Got to bring more Negroes in there to sing and dance and do their little shuffle. Can't have Ted Nugent. Well, it's about time they pull in the psychics on this missing plane. I mean, why not? I mean, come on.
In the past, governments have used psychics to help with searches. Can they use a psychic here?
It may seem an odd question, but I know these people have been used in murder investigations on many, many occasions. Radio Tweak, investigators sometimes use psychics. Why hasn't anyone considered the services of a credible psychic specializing in missing persons? I mean, it sounds incredible, but they have been used before.
Good to be with you tonight. I'm Lynn Berry. Dr. Drew has the night off. I'm back with Jenny. And Jenny, when I heard him talking about that, I saw your face. You were making a couple of them. What are you thinking?
Yeah, look, I am all for wanting to believe in mysticism and psychics and stuff, and there are these tremendous stories where they figure things out. But I don't know, Lynn.
You're not alone.
No.
You're not alone. Social media comments, right. Controversy, skepticism surrounding the use of psychics to help find this flight. Are out there.
It works great.
Yep, a lot of people are out there saying that. Sam's still with us. Joining us as well, though, Lisa Williams, a psychic medium, and Les Aben, CNN aviation analyst and a 777 pilot. Lisa, I'll start with you. You know, your theory here is that this plane landed somewhere. Some of the passengers are still alive, but the co-pilot was involved. I'm going to start first and foremost with there are people at home right now that are going to shake their head at that are going to be disappointed that you would take that leap when you don't have hard, concrete evidence. What would you say to those people?
Well, naturally, I don't actually have hard concrete evidence, and I think any psychic who has hard concrete evidence can't do their job correctly because they get misinformed, they get interpreted, and they'll just work on what they know. So I tend to work off what I don't know.
Okay, so what goes to that? Les, you're a naysayer when it comes to psychics, but they have been used in murder cases and a lot of criminal cases. What's your reaction to what Lisa's saying?
Well, to what success, with no disparaging Lisa's profession. I mean, listen, I'm an airline pilot. I deal in black and white. It's difficult for me to in this particular circumstance to think that a psychic could solve a problem that people all over the world are not able to solve at this point.
And I think probably, Les, you're not alone with that. Sam, you have a question for Lisa?
I do, and I say why not? I want to hear what Lisa has to say. Lisa, you believe that this plane was hijacked and that some of the passengers are still alive. Do you have any idea where the passengers are being held, if this is indeed true?
Well, this is actually an interesting question because I do believe that it actually crashed and I see a lot of trees. I didn't specifically look into this for a reason because I'm actually reading for some of the family's friends.
Wow.
Therefore, I've actually only looked at it today and I saw them landing in a lot of overhang of trees. I kept feeling as though, yes, there are some people that have passed away because it's only natural after these amount of days someone is going to cross with no food, no water. But I also believe there was a hijacking, and I think there is also a larger organization behind all of this that is leading us off track to, with this debris, I think they're leading us off track. So therefore, it's all kept hush-hush.
You know, Lisa, that's your theory, and there are a lot of people out there that have theories. Les, I'm curious what your theory is of what happened here.
Well, you know, interesting enough, Lisa's theory about airplanes potentially, or the airplane crashing and into a land-based area, that's a theory that I very much believe in. I'm not sure that what you're showing right now on the screen may actually be airplane debris. I think we really should be looking in the jungle areas specifically. But my reason is much more methodical and more, you know, black-white type situation. I believe that these cruise members were heroes, and I think they were dealing with a situation that got out of control, and they attempted to divert the airplane to a place to the west, like has been shown all along.
You're talking more about that idea that there could have been a fire on plane and that is what disabled the communication. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, a fire is the most plausible situation with smoke involved and so on and so forth. There could be other issues. There could have been other problems with reference to hypoxia, if maybe a windshield blew out, something to that effect, or cracked and slowly caused a leak. But I doubt that situation. But any sort of mechanical problem that might have occurred, I'm thinking that the crew was fighting an issue.
Well, Jenny, go ahead.
So, Lisa, do you think we're going to get an absolute resolution? Do you think that they're going to actually find out what really happened?
I think eventually you will find out. I think it will actually happen because I do believe that it's actually going to be coming out. And I do feel as though it's going to be actually coming out within the next 3 weeks for some reason. That's what I've just been told in, you know, my own witchy woo land. But I do feel that it is going to come out, and I do feel as though there's a lot of conspiracies that are going to be put to bed, and we're going to really see the real truth very soon.
Wow. Well, Lisa, I do appreciate you having a sense of humor about it as well, Lisa and Stan.
So there you go, boys and girls. You've got the latest possible information on the disappearing aircraft, and I bet you that the psychic is probably just as liable to be right as the airplane pilot, you know. So anyhow, I don't know. I think that there is such a thing as people being sensitive and psychic and so forth like that. Of course, there's a lot of phonies too, but I think there's things that we just haven't figured out yet that are all around us. Well, after listening to this, I think a lot of you guys might want to become cops in Hawaii, in Honolulu. Huh, wow. You've
got very little shoes to fit.
Can you go under the covers if you're undercover? Well, Honolulu police are urging state lawmakers to keep a provision that lets undercover officers have sex with prostitutes. Police say this protection is essential to catching criminals in the act and that strict internal controls prohibit misconduct. Critics argue it can further victimize sex workers and say the exemption is antiquated at best. But State Rep. Carl Rose says police testimony convinced him the provision was needed, saying, "It's a really murky area. If they think it's necessary, this is one area where I did defer to them and say, I hope you're not having sex with prostitutes." The question remains, where do you draw the line? We asked some penguins to comment.
There you go. Head for Hawaii, boys. The trouble is, I think, most of their, a hell of a lot of their sex workers out there are not very white. Well, digging around in the archives brought me up with something here by Robert Perry. At the height of, as world leaders struggled to praise the late Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, infamous for abetting the 1982 massacre of the Palestinian civilians at Sabra and Shatila, in Lebanon, another grim chapter of Sharon's history was his role in the Guatemalan genocide. At the height of the Guatemala's mass slaughters of the 1980s, including genocide against the Ixit Indians, the Reagan administration worked with Israeli officials to provide helicopters and the Guatemalan army used to hunt down fleeing villagers, according to the documentary and eyewitness evidence. During testimony at the recent genocide trial of former Guatemalan dictator Efrem Rios Montt, one surprise was how often massacre survivors cited the army's use of helicopters in the scorched earth offensive. Journalist Alan Nairn, who covered the war in Guatemala and attended the Rios Montt trial, said in an interview, quote, "One interesting thing that has come out of this trial, as witnesses after witnesses testified, was a very substantial number of them talked about fleeing into the mountains and being bombed and attacked and machine gunned by U.S. planes and helicopters." Quote, "At the time this was going on, I was aware this was happening in some cases, but from the testimony of the witnesses, it sounded like these attacks from U.S. planes and helicopters were more frequent than we realized at the time. That's an example of how we don't know the whole story yet, how extensive the U.S. complicity was in these crimes. Part of the mystery was, where did Guatemala's UH-1H Huey helicopters come from, since the U.S. Congress continued to resist military sales to Guatemala because of its wretched human rights record. The answer appears to be that some of the helicopters were arranged secretly by President Ronald Reagan, the warmonger, National Security Council staff, through Israeli intelligence networks." Rios Montt began pressing the United States for 10 UH-1H helicopters in June 1983 as his military campaign was ramping up. Since Guatemala lacked the U.S. foreign military sales credits or cash to buy the helicopters, warmonger Reagan's national security team looked for unconventional ways to arrange the delivery of the equipment. And, of course, this is all that stuff with Ollie North and all that kind of stuff. On August 1st, 1983, NSC aides Oliver North and Alfonso Sapla Bosch reported to National Security Advisor William Clark that his deputy, Robert Bud McFarland, was planning to exploit his Israeli channels to secure the helicopters for Guatemala, according to a document that I discovered at Reagan's Presidential Library. Quote, "With regard to the loan of 10 helicopters, it is our understanding that Bud will take this up with the Israelis, wrote North and Sapir Bach. There are expectations that they would be forthcoming. Another possibility is to have an exercise with the Guatemalans. We would then use U.S. mechanics and Guatemalan parts to bring the helicopters up to snuff, unquote. By then, McFarland had long and intimate relations with Israeli intelligence involving various backdoor deals. There you go. That article goes on quite a ways. I'll send it to you. Well, here comes the revamped war party again. Having evaded accountability for the Iraq War and other bloody disasters, star neocons William Kristol and Robert Kagan have refashioned their pro-war arguments, dressing them up in humanitarian garb with glamorous accessories of national greatness, as David Swanson explains. War activists, like peace activists, push an agenda. We don't think of war activists as activists because they rotate in and out of government positions. They receive huge amounts of funding, have access to big media, and get meetings with top officials just by asking, without having to generate protests first. They also display great contempt for the public and openly discuss ways to manipulate people through fear and nationalism, further shifting their image away from the popular organizers. But war activists are not journalists, not researchers, not academics. They don't inform or educate. They advocate. They just advocate for something that most of the time and increasingly nobody wants. William Kristol and Robert Kagan and their organization, the Foreign Policy Initiative, stand out as exemplary war activists. They've modified their tone slightly since the days of Project for a New American Century, an earlier war activist organization. They talk less about oil and more about human rights, but they insist on U.S. domination of the world. They find any success by anyone else in the world's a threat to the United States. And they demand an ever larger, more frequent use of military, even if world domination can be achieved without it. War, for these war activists, is an end in itself. As it was much more common in the 19th century, these agitators believe war brings strength, glory, builds character, and makes a nation a superpower. Kristol recently lamented U.S. public opposition to war. He does have cause for concern. The U.S. public is sick of wars, outraged by those in Iraq and Afghanistan, and insistent that new ones not be begun. In September, missile strikes into Syria were successfully opposed by public resistance. In February, a new bill to impose sanctions on Iran and commit the United States to joining any Israeli-Iranian war was blocked by public pressure. The country and the world are turning against drone warfare. The next logical step after ending the wars and preventing wars would be to begin dismantling the infrastructure that generates pressure for wars. This hasn't happened yet. During every NCAA basketball game, the announcers thank the U.S. troops for watching from 175 nations. Weapons sales are soaring. New nukes are being developed. NATO has expanded to the edge of Russia, but the possible change is in the air. A new peace activist group called WorldBeyondWar.org has begun pushing for war's abolition. Quote, a war-weary public can be awakened and rallied. Indeed, events are right now doing the awakening. All that's needed is the rallying, and the turnabout can be fast. Only 5 years after the end of the Vietnam War and 15 years after our involvement there began in a big way, Ronald Reagan ran against both Democrat dovishness and Republican detente. He proposed confronting the Soviet Union and rebuilding our military. It was said that the country was too war-weary, that it was too soon after Vietnam for Reagan's stern and challenging message, but Reagan won the election in 1980, and by 1990, an awakened America had won the Cold War. Here's Kagan, who has worked for Hillary Clinton and whose wife, Victoria Nuland, has just been stirring up trouble in the Ukraine as Assistant Secretary of State. This is from an article by Kagan, which admired President Barack Obama. As Yan Ongstong recently noted, the military strength underpins hegemony. Here, the United States remains unmatched. It is far away from the most powerful nation the world has ever known, and there has been no decline in Americans' relative military capacity, at least not yet. This pair is something of a good cop, bad cop team. Crystal bashes Obama for being a wimp and not fighting enough wars. Kagan reassures Obama that he can be master of the universe if he'll only build up the military a bit more and maybe fight a couple of more wars here and there. The response from some of the Obama supporters has been to point out that their hero has been fighting lots of wars and killing lots of people. Thank you very much. The response from some peace activists is to play to people's selfishness with cries to bring the war dollars home. But humanitarian warriors are right to care about the world, even if they're only pretending or badly misguided on how to help. It's okay to oppose wars, both because they kill huge numbers of poor people far from our shores and because we could have used the money for schools and trains. But it's important to add that a small fraction of the U.S. military spending, we could ensure the whole world had food and clean water and medicine. We could be the most beloved nation. I know that it's not the status of war activists are after. In fact, when people begin to grasp that possibility, war activism will be finished for good. Well, I doubt that, because the greedy bastards and predatory capitalists, they're always several miles in front of the crowd. And I think we can try to limit it, but it's going to be very difficult to squash it. Well, that's about it for Saturn's Day. Terrible Tommy here. Terrible Tommy over and out. 14-5. Oh, and did I mention that the song we played at the beginning of the show was a Russian lady singing? Yeah, that was a song from Russia.
When your nation is floundering in a sea of phony debt, and your cities are seething with domestic violence, and you're broke and disgusted with your worthless government, will you need the peacekeeping forces today? As the United Nations sends our soldiers overseas for the purpose of propping up their fake democracies, don't be fooled by denial. These are gross conspiracies. Keep your eyes on the peacekeeping forces today. Keep your eyes on the peacekeeping forces, the peacekeeping forces. Those ungodly troops are on their way. Keep your eyes on the peacekeeping forces, the peacekeeping forces. Through force they will take your guns away. As our traitorous leaders sell this country down the drain to assist and support the international bankers' aims, don't be fooled by your TV. It's just there to fan the flames of another United Nations charade. Keep your eyes on the peacekeeping forces, the peacekeeping forces. Those ungodly troops are here today. Keep your eyes on the peacekeeping forces, the peacekeeping forces. They're unloading shipments every day. We fight.
Watch the mother of global martial law attempt to make things right. Wrong. Now that your mind has been salvaged and you still have truth in sight, and you have not been duped by all their propaganda hype, will you fight for this country when you know the time is right? Will you fight the